You're listening to the Nightlife Podcast with Indira Naidu.
When you picture the typical face of someone who is homeless, do you picture an older white man, maybe on a park bench? What if I told you that the largest group of growing homeless people are actually women over 50? Women just like your mum or your grandmother, women who have worked hard all their life, supporting their family, and through a string of tragedies often out of their control, they find themselves on the streets, in women's shelters, or living in their cars. Well, that's the reality for more than 50,000 older Australian women, and the focus of a new documentary, Undercover, by filmmaker Sue Thompson, who joins me now. Welcome to Nightlife, Sue.
Hello, Indira.
Sue, it's great to have your company. Now, Sue, the focus of your documentary, women over 40, why are they the biggest growing group of homeless people in Australia?
Women over 50.
Sorry, over 50.
Well, I mean, you said it in your introduction, but there are a number of factors, often very complex. People with families would understand this. Obviously, domestic violence is one issue. I think financial inequity, the gender pay gap, all of these contribute to women becoming older who perhaps haven't saved a lot of money, don't have a lot of superannuation, may have raised children, may be looking after aged parents. I think this is, women tend to be in these sort of caring roles. It sounds cliched, but it's just... the fact is it's true. And I suppose they're not thinking about their future, perhaps, you know, paying their rent, if they have a house, paying a mortgage. And the women that I found, and they are often described as the invisible homeless, they were staying with friends, staying with their children, perhaps travelling around Australia. But the fact of the matter was they actually had nowhere permanent to stay. So it's, I don't know. The reason I made the film, Indira, is because I found it appalling that women over 55 find themselves in this position. And they did this statistic. They did a whole study came out in 2019, which sort of highlighted this fact. And what the sad reality is, I made this film, and I very confidently at the beginning of making this film 3 years ago started saying, I'm going to make a film about solutions. I'm going to say at the end of the film, I will let people know who've watched this film how we can solve this issue. And 3 years later, the issue is bigger. It's overwhelming, in fact. And governments have at least are on board and are trying to do something about it. But it's perhaps a little bit too little too late, you know,
And no doubt, Sue, when you started making the documentary, you said 3 years ago, that was before the pandemic. And we know that the pandemic, particularly for workers in the care industry, which largely are women, they were hit hardest by the changes to their working conditions. So that would have driven those homeless numbers. And of course, we've seen soaring prices for homes and a lack of affordable housing as well, making it even worse. You describe, Sue, these women as invisible. What makes them invisible?
Well, I suppose what I mean by that, Indira, is they're not the women that we see sitting on the street begging. I you know, deliberately didn't choose that group of people. They have a whole lot of issues that, you know, force them to end up living on the street and begging. But the women in my film are women like you and me, and that we perhaps have had a job and a life. You might have raised children, and you're not taking drugs and perhaps got serious mental health issues. You actually just cannot afford to pay your rent or your mortgage.
And the other thing that your documentary Undercover, Sue, highlights is how quickly anyone can spiral into homelessness. How can it happen so quickly?
Well, I think if you remember, there's a woman in the film called Susan who she was a high-powered advertising executive. She was, you know, leading a very exciting life, and her mother got sick and she left Melbourne but was paying her rent here in a, you know, very nice flat in Elwood. And she was caring for her mum who was dying in Sydney. And at the same time, she lost her partner, her relationship broke down, and then she lost her brother. So she had three major things happen. She came back to Melbourne and didn't have a job. And suddenly, you know, for the first time in her life, she couldn't get another job being 55. She was paying $450 a week rent. And, you know, you keep doing that as long as you can until you use all your savings. And then she ate into her superannuation, and she didn't have a lot, she said, because she started getting it late in life. But suddenly she said, I was living in a flat in Elwood and I couldn't pay my rent, but I also couldn't afford to move. And I was, she said, I was so scared. I basically was in a place of stasis where I couldn't move forward and I couldn't go back, and I didn't really know what to do. And she basically had no money.
Mm.
So that happened for her in about 6 months.
And so these women, when they find themselves in this situation, there is this other belief for the general public that there is somewhere for them to go. What is the case when you do find yourself in that situation? Where do you go?
Well, you know, we're one of the richest countries in the world, and I don't understand how we haven't solved this. There are, of course, some extraordinary organisations that are out there and that these women can access, and a lot of them do ultimately. But these organisations like Housing for the Aged Action Group, Women's Housing, Women's Property Initiative, the YWCA, they don't have enough stock. So if you don't have enough stock of social housing to put people in, what do you do with them? You put them into a boarding house. I mean, we saw during the pandemic that governments did step in, and that was what was interesting making the film during this time. Suddenly, the people who were living on the streets were put into hotels and motels. It showed that governments can solve this problem when they put their mind to it. And I think all the research and all the reports are saying there's just not enough stock. You know, we have to build more housing in this country, and we have to have affordable housing built into everything that's built. Like, you know, 10% of every, you know, development that goes up in Melbourne should be affordable housing. You know, apparently there's a statistic that for every 1,000 people in Australia, there's 400 houses. So that's fine if you live, you know, 10, 20 to a house. But if you're an older woman living by yourself, and maybe you don't have a partner anymore, you don't have children, you need, there's not enough housing out there for us. And governments need to, I mean, the way to solve it, which I'm learning more and more and have learned while making it, is that governments do need to be a part of this solution. They have to, you know, you have to highlight housing as a priority.
As you say in your documentary Shelter, it's a human right. I'm speaking to filmmaker Sue Thompson, whose new documentary is called Undercover. She follows the plight of several older Australian women over 55 who have been caught in the homeless trap. Sue, the women that you follow, that you get to know, that we get to know through your documentary, have found all sorts of ways to temporarily shelter themselves. Some live in their cars or vans. You know, others have these temporary housing situations. The ones that was interesting, the ones who live in their cars and vans, I mean, some people would think, oh, if you know have a van and you can move and go to different locations, and maybe think that that's a glamorous way, in a way, to be homeless, if there's such a thing. But it's not the case, obviously, is it?
Well, I mean, there is something romantic about it, Indira. I can see that, even, you know, I think, but you and I'd probably like to do it for about a week, wouldn't we? When you're forced to live in your car, and, you know, you think about when it's cold and how you stay warm and where you park your car, and what if somebody's tapping on your window late at night? I think it'd be terrifying.
Terrifying.
I just think, I mean, what we see in the film is, they're incredibly sort of optimistic. And there is one woman in particular you might be thinking about, Margaret, who starts off in the film being very optimistic about, no, this is great living in my van. And she was seeing the world in a way perhaps she never thought she would have the opportunity to. But by the end of the film, Margaret is having doubts about the choices she's made, and suddenly she realized she doesn't have a lot of options. As she says, you might remember, she says, you know, if I wanted to go and rent somewhere in Brisbane near my children, I actually can't afford to now. So she's got a lovely van, but it's tiny, and you know, she's got a few back issues with driving now, and she found during COVID that she couldn't just park the van anywhere. You had to go into caravan parks, and caravan parks were, you know, predominantly full during COVID and costly. So again, that made her life difficult. So, you know, it's interesting you talk about that, because some people, even getting the film up and funded, would say, well, you know, they're not actually homeless because they're not living on the street. And that used to drive me insane because, well, this is what we think. We think homeless people are only those that we see on the street. And
rough
they're not.
Sleepers, yeah.
There's so much more complexity around the word homelessness. I mean, I started saying, and even in the film, Margaret says it, these women are having housing crisis. Okay, they might have some form of accommodation, but it's no way to live your life when it's not permanent, or you're living in a car and you're turning 75 or 80. I mean, I just don't know what people think, you know, I mean, why they think we should accept that in this country.
Yeah, these women that you found were so resilient. I mean, they were looking after their everything. I mean, looking after, you know, the mechanics of their cars, because they knew how reliable they were. These were their wheels and also their home.
I think it's interesting, you know, we could have called the film something with the word car in it, couldn't we? Because I think that the women that have cars felt a lot more secure in the world, knowing that even if they lost if some of them were in social housing that could potentially be short term, if they had their car, they felt safe. So they really looked after them. And, they didn't take them for granted.
Yeah, you also gave us a really interesting insight into caravan parks. And, again, that is something that most of us are familiar with, you know, as a temporary holiday, couple of days, and it's all very fine. But when you're trapped and stuck there for months, for years on end, you focus on a couple of women, and it was really heartbreaking. One of them, who had fled a whole lot of domestic violence in her life, not many choices, the quality of her accommodation, even though she's paying very high rent, wasn't very good. You know, there was leaking in the carpet and a whole lot of things. Again, the reality of what caravan parks have become now, very different from these holiday places that we know.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, like all housing in Australia, even caravan parks are a way of making money. So it becomes a financial benefit, and it's a commodity for those people that own those parks and potentially sort of see them as a place where they can develop, you know, more housing and, you know, or more vans or more little on-site places and make millions. You know, like, I think it's, again, everything is about money and not about the person. And when you hear what rent they're paying, I mean, how shocking was that?
Like $400,
$300 for a one room, maybe two rooms, you had a little kitchenette, caravan. And then Suzelle up the road, who owned her caravan, was paying $220, I think, to have it parked on the land. And I think also what people think, well, why don't they get up and move? And that's a big part. Without saying it, I wanted the audience to understand so much of this, or maybe Margot Robbie says it in the narration, is about community. And those women in those appalling conditions, that was their sort of home. And all they were wanting was the leaks to be fixed, or maybe the rent reduced in some sort of compassionate way of understanding that these women are at the end of their lives, not the beginning. And why can't we make older people's lives a little bit easier and say thank you for what you've done for society?
So you also try to look at some of the solutions, some of the ways that groups are helping. You focus on a group called Housing All Australians that see these, what we're now aware of, lots and lots of empty houses and an office space that's lying vacant as one of the solutions. What sort of things are Housing All Australians doing?
Well, if you remember, there's an incredible building in Box Hill, which was, I think, has been sitting empty. It was a boys' home, you know, in the 50s, I think, has been sitting empty for 20 years. It's earmarked to be developed into, you know, apartments or something, as a lot of these empty buildings are. And so what Rob Pradlin, who started Housing All Australians, his whole, he comes from the property background. And so he would see these empty buildings all around Melbourne in particular and say, and he understands the problems that are happening out there. So he says, well, why can't we put people in the buildings? If the development of this house is going to take, you know, 20 years, which does seem some developers, it does take years and years before planning permits are approved and stuff. In the meantime, why don't you lease it to me for $1 a year and I will put in, I will work in conjunction with another organisation, a not-for-profit, and we will put people into them. And he's managed to do that. There's, you know, he's done two, one, this one in Box Hill and another one he's done in, you know, Albert Park, and he's got them earmarked all around Australia. So because he's, the thing about Rob is that he has connections, and unlike people who work in government, you don't necessarily have those, there's not that sort of
cross business government.
Yeah, with the property industry. And so they're all sort of fighting or semi-fighting with each other or just ignoring each other, whereas Rob at least is trying to bring everyone to the table and come up with really concrete solutions. And in the meantime, he's putting people into these, because his thing is short term, because ultimately the owner of the buildings want it back. But yeah, so he's doing incredible work, and his thing is Housing All Australians, not just older women. But he came on board this film and became a passionate supporter, and you know, we couldn't have done it. He introduced us to so many people along the way, and we couldn't have done it without him. It was incredible.
Talking to filmmaker Sue Thompson and her documentary about the older women particularly caught in homelessness is called Undercover. Tell me how you actually made this documentary. So you said that it took you 3 years and some of that overlapped the pandemic lockdown era. And it must have been so hard to win the trust of these women too and tell and that, share their story.
Yeah, because normally I do tend to make long form films and I spend quite a bit of that time getting to know people. But 3 years is a long time to spend on one project. And obviously COVID impacted on that. Because, you know, what I like to do is I might be talking to you and you might mention that you know someone that, oh, yeah, I think, you know, my friend is sort of having issues with that or struggling a little bit or can't pay her rent or is worried. So then I might go and have a coffee with that person. I tell them a bit about myself, my own story, and then I might do that two or three times and before I take a camera in. But with COVID, I couldn't meet anyone, and if I did meet, it had to be outside. And then people started becoming very anxious about getting together because of, you know, certainly in the early days, the fear around getting, you know, getting COVID. So it really did, I suppose, I still worked in exactly the same way, but it was a much longer process. And then we'd have these sort of gaps, you know, of 2 or 3 months where I wasn't really allowed to go out. So I would then have to keep in contact with the women just on the telephone or, usually I'm pretty good at ringing someone and having a chat. And I lost women along the way because some women would get moved or they'd get put into housing or they would go traveling or, you know, they, you know, I did lose a couple of women who decided, you know, one woman said to me, I told my daughter about this project and she said, if you're in that film, you know, I'm going to be furious with you. You know, so there is shame around it. And I think, you know, that comes out in the film. None of us want to be homeless, as you know, so nobody wants to grow up and become homeless. It's a unfortunate part of, you know, living in a capitalist society in 2022 for
And
some
I think
people.
That's also a problem, Sue. We've got a listener here who said that she knew a woman in Sydney several years ago who was house sitting and with her dog, and made it out as if she was just, you know, that was her job to house sit and move from house to house so she didn't have to pay rent. But this woman is now saying, when I look back on it, she was actually homeless, but that was the way she was covering it up so that it wasn't obvious because she didn't want to, you know, be labelled as such.
I think that's it. You know, it's that terrible thing here that we think we're too scared to admit it, because we do immediately think of someone holding, you know, sitting on a blanket and asking us for money. And not that there's anything wrong with that either, but the worry that you have your life has unraveled that far, I think a lot of women start, you know, pretending or sort of exaggerating or, you know, avoiding the truth. So I think I would do that. If I was house sitting and with my dog and moving from house to house, I wouldn't tell anyone I was homeless. I'd say, oh, no, you know, I'm having fun and it's interesting, and we always try and make the best of it, don't we?
I did a series for SBS, Filthy Rich and Homeless, where we followed a lot of different categories of people who had fallen into the homeless trap. And I do some work with the Wayside Chapel, the Homeless Crisis Centre here in King's Cross. But the stigma, this is the thing that we, you know, feel that needs to be broken before you can even tackle the challenges, is that there is a stigma, not only the people that are homeless, but the people who look at the homeless people as well. And one of the things we will say at the Wayside is just to start the conversation, walk up to someone and ask them how they are and if they need anything, you know, to actually, you know, treat them like the human beings they are, rather than, you know, walk past as if they're, you know, don't have a name and they don't have, you know, an existence. And that is the sometimes the hardest thing, that, you know, our relationship to someone who's struggling in homelessness.
Yeah, and I think, again, I think if we can become a more compassionate society, it will change. We can make serious changes in the way we live our lives and the way we support each other in this society. You know, we are all members of a community here. I made a film a bit that what you say reminds me of, called Tempest in the Drop-In, a few years ago, set at the drop-in centre in St Kilda, where some of the clients, they have very serious mental health issues, and they worked with a group of actors and they put on Shakespeare's The Tempest, and I filmed it all and it got on the ABC. And those people in that film said that when they walked down, you know, Chapel Street and Carlisle Street and all around St Kilda and Ackland Street, so many people who saw the film on the ABC would say to them, oh, you were in that film, including a lot of kids, because there's a local primary school from St Kilda Primary, would go up to them, whose parents would have told me afterwards how frightened their children were of these people, because they can act a bit strange. And then they would start talking to them in like the queue at the supermarket or something. And the
break
people
down
in
those
the
barriers.
Film just would said, you've changed my life, Sue. You know, like they were invisible, or people were terrified of them just because, you know.
Yeah. Thanks, Sue. Thank you so much for talking to us about your film, Sue Thompson, the filmmaker who's made a documentary called Undercover, and you can find that online at Australian Documentaries.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.